Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Going back to my new format this time, got a few things on the schedule for you. This podcast, I'm going to do a gear review talking about the Hammerschmidt system that I recently got on my Yeti 7 and give you my impressions of that and how to get the most out of that system. I've got a review on an app, interesting app that I've got on my Droid that I use for training and stuff like that. Doing a review on pre and post workout drinks, kind of an overview of, you know, what's the point of these things, what are you trying to accomplish, what are you looking for, and then, you know, my recommendations, what I recommend to my athletes, my riders that they use, and then also address a question that keeps popping up with this regarding chocolate milk, and, you know, is chocolate milk just as good as these other supplements that I talk about. And then finally got a training tip for you, basically applied posture on your bike, and you know why you need to kind of get off of your bike to fix your posture, and then how you can apply good posture on your bike, and that's going to result in better balance, better pedaling power, less wear and tear on your joints. And so getting away from this cliche posture that cyclists are known for, this like almost deformed upper back, you know, Quasimodo, you know, hunchback of Notre Dame look in posture, which is just, it's so unhealthy, it's so bad for us, and just because most cyclists have it does not mean that it's inevitable. So understanding what good posture is and how to apply it to your bike and stuff like that will definitely make a big difference. So hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I guess we will get into it. Hey guys, wanted to do a review on the Hammerschmidt. For those of you guys that aren't familiar with it, the Hammerschmidt is the Truvative internally geared front derailleur system. And if you haven't seen it, it's pretty stinking nifty. I got one a few months back, and it takes a little while to get used to how to best use it. Like any other new piece of technology. And, you know, me and my buddy were actually discussing this the other night. Like, you know, I don't consider 29-inch wheels to be an advancement in technology. I do consider the Hammerschmidt system to be an advancement in technology. You know, 29-inch wheels are just a bigger version of the same thing that we have. And personally, I feel like, you know, you could just get stronger and increase your technical skills and achieve pretty much the same thing that a 29er is going to do for you. But the Hammerschmidt is definitely a true advancement in shifting technology. And I found out a couple things with the Hammerschmidt. One, the granny gear is an awesome tool. Two, the front derailleur just simply sucks ass. And, you know, I had personally gotten to the point where I stopped using my granny gear. You know, I'd gone the way of a lot of trail riders these days and going with a 1x9 system and just, you know, gutting it out with a 36 tooth on the front of my trail bike and just, you know, grinding it out on the climbs and stuff like that. And what I realized is that I couldn't do that with the Hammerschmidt system, because when you're in the higher gear, there is a little bit of drag on the system. And basically, you know, it's the way that I have it set up, it's a 24-tooth chain ring. And then when you throw it into the overdrive, it's a equivalent to like a 38-tooth chain ring. And so basically, you figure out real quick that you have to change how you use your gearing. Because again, with the old front derailleur system, I was always afraid to shift my gears up front because I wasn't sure if it was going to shift back up. You know, sometimes it wouldn't drop back down. I mean, the stinking thing just never seemed to do what I wanted it to unless I knew well in advance that I needed to shift and was able to do it. I mean, you know, definitely don't try shifting using your front derailleur when you're already on a climb and you already realize that you need it. And so, but with the Hammerschmidt on my trail bike, as soon as I gave up my, you know, what I call my macho ideas of pedaling, where I need to stay in the biggest ring possible and just, you know, gut it out, once I got past that and I just started dropping it down and using the smaller gearing, and because it's a single ring system, you can use all 9 of your gears in the back, or however many you have. I guess some of you guys got 10 now or whatever, but you can use all of your gears in your back without your chain getting crossed up. And so it, you know, you can use your big gears in the back to you know, go pretty fast and keep some tension on the pedals. But you know, like I said, what I found is that the I was able to go just as fast, if not faster, on a lot of sections, especially climbs and you know, slight uphill sections of trail, because with the smaller gearing, you're able to find a better gear ratio, I guess. And it, you know, because in what's equivalent to your granny gear, it's a smaller gear change. So when you change, when you downshift or upshift in your rear, it's not as big of a gearing difference as it is when you're in a 38 or 36 tooth chainring compared to like a 24 tooth. And so you're able to kind of fine tune and maintain your cadence better. So I've also found that I've been able to accelerate, you know, out of corners and through sprints faster with the, because I can get things turning over easier, especially on these bigger, you know, bikes. You know, my trail bike is a, you know, 35-pound, 7-inch travel bike, and so, you know, that really, really helps. And then, you know, as soon as things start flattening out or start shifting down, then I shift up into the overdrive, and the larger gearing is helpful there. But, you know, overall, it has really made a great, you know, impact on my riding. I really enjoy using the thing. Like I said, at first I wasn't too sure about it, because you can't just keep applying your same mentality of pedaling, you know, stay in your big gear until you absolutely need the granny gear. You almost have to reverse that to get the most out of the Hammerschmidt system. But it's awesome, because you're never going to lose your chain. It will not pop off with the single ring, you know, guided system that the Hammerschmidt uses. And the fact that you can use that thing, I mean, you know, when I'm on a trail that I don't know, and I'm on like a downhill section, all of a sudden I come around a corner and boom, there's a short, steep uphill climb, and I know my gearing's too high, I can just hit the Hammerschmidt, you know, shift back down, and it never fails. It never misses. I mean, you can shift this thing going backwards, forward, you know, already pedaling uphill. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whatever, it will never miss a shift. You can try as hard as you want, and it will not miss. And so I've gotten to the point now where I'm able to make pretty much every climb on my trail bike that used to be a bit of a crapshoot. You know, you'd have to go into it with some momentum and hope you didn't get bounced around. Now that I'm able to use my granny gear, I'm able to actually like use my balance and my technique to get through some of these steeper sections, rather than just trying to like fly into them and hope that my momentum carries me through it before my gearing taps out and I can't, you know, run out of gears to downshift into. So that's, you know, that's it. You know, the Hammerschmidt system, if you've been thinking about trying it, I highly recommend it. I really can't recommend it enough for trail riding. Because it gives you the best of both worlds. Like I said, you realize that for your trail bike, the granny gear is a great tool. Just the front derailleur system sucks, and it is so time that we get past that that cheesy front derailleur system that's been ruining our lives for so long. So you know, there is a couple things. You know, definitely make sure that if you're not a competent mechanic, that you have someone install it for you. There are some facing tools, some special facing tools that make the interface cleaner. And so if you can find a shop that has those tools to kind of get it set up perfectly for you right off the bat, I definitely recommend that you do that, although it's not so complicated that if you are a home mechanic, you can't figure it out. But it's definitely a little bit more involved than your usual bottom bracket and crank installation. But that's about it. I mean, I don't really have any complaints. I've been riding these things really hard and have had no complaints. I mean, the cranks that come with them are super strong. You know, it's not an obscenely heavy system, although, you know, I'm always willing to take on a little more weight to add some more fun. So I figure, you know, just get stronger rather than sacrifice fun in the name of a few grams or whatever. But anyway, so that's about it. The Hammerschmidt system is great. Check it out. And if you have, you know, a shop that has a bike that carries them, I know like the Kona, Kona's got a couple bikes coming out with them. They're becoming more popular. So, you know, you can probably find a shop around you that has one. You can go and check it out. But definitely a good investment. I really highly recommend it. And like I said, you just have to change how you approach pedaling in order to get the most out of it. In fact, one of my clients had one and ended up selling it real cheap to somebody because he just kept saying, "Man, I can't get past that drag on the overdrive." And at first, the first few weeks of riding it with me trying to just use it like I used a regular front derailleur system, I was feeling the same thing. But like I said, as soon as I gave up that macho idea of pedaling and started using that granny gear more on it, boom, it totally changed how that system works and my view on it and the whole nine yards. So great, great thing. Definitely think it's a big advancement for trail riding and something you guys should check out. So see, Truvative makes that. They're also, SRAM and RockShox and Truvative are all owned by the same company. So you guys can check out more at truvative.com. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this gear review. And next gear review, I'm going to talk about my other new favorite thing, my adjustable seat post. Hey guys, I want to tell you about an interesting app that I've installed on my Droid. I think you can also get it for your iPhone and probably an iPod Touch. But basically, it's called a Cardio Trainer. It has a free version and a paid version. And I've just been using the free version myself, but it's actually a really nifty training tool that I wanted to tell you guys about. And basically what it does is it allows you to GPS and track your rides. And so it'll show you an overlay on the map of where your ride went, which is always kind of interesting to see it from a bird's eye perspective. But even more importantly, what it does, it tells you your total time, your average speed, how many feet of climbing and stuff was involved, and then also graphs your speed so that you can see how fast you're going on certain sections of trail and stuff like that. So like I said, it gives you a lot of cool feedback and some objective feedback. Things that I've been using it for is just one, to get an idea of how long and how fast some of these average trail rides that I've been doing in my area are. But it's also a cool training tool because I was talking with one of my riders the other day, and he was talking about how he's not feeling fast, and which can sometimes happen, especially as we get later in the season and we start to get a little tired, and so the legs just aren't feeling as springy, I guess. But without something objective to let yourself look and see, are you really getting faster, or because there's a difference between feeling fast and actually being fast. And so having something like the Cardio Trainer app that will allow you to get an objective look at how fast you actually are going will give you a better idea of if what you're feeling is actually true, or if it's just kind of what you're feeling versus what's actually happening with your training. So anytime you can get an objective look at what's going on with your riding and your training and get it away from the world of subjective, how do I feel, then that's always a good thing. So a bunch of different ways you can use this thing, trying different lines on practice runs on different parts of a race course and actually see which one is faster. Again, just tracking your average trail ride and see how you're doing and see what sections you're having trouble with and where you can work on trying to pick up some speed and stuff like that. And you can also attach it to or sync it to your Facebook account so that whenever you do a ride, it can get uploaded. I'm sure some of you guys have probably noticed those Facebook posts that pop up every once in a while that I rode X number of miles and X number of minutes or whatever the case may be. So just kind of a cool little tool. Wanted to let you guys know about the Cardio Trainer app. Like I said, you can pick it up for free at the Android marketplace. And I'm not as familiar with the iTunes or the iPhones and their stuff, but like I said, I'm sure you can probably get it there as well. So it's just something I want to let you guys know about. If you guys got any cool apps that you guys have been using, certainly let me know, and I'll be happy to pass them on to our listeners. But I just want to let you guys know about the Cardio Trainer app. Hey guys, wanted to give you guys a little supplement tip and review this podcast. And I get a lot of questions from people regarding the post-workout or pre-workout drinks, and I kind of wanted to go over what exactly they're trying to accomplish, what you're looking for, what my recommendations are, and things like that. And so basically, your nutrition before and after your workout, your strength training workouts especially, but also, you know, your rides as well, really plays a big role in, one, how you're going to perform, and two, what kind of results you're going to get from that workout. So because I'm the MTB strength coach, I'm going to stick with some, you know, tips for strength training and stuff like that. But again, just remember, a lot of this stuff will apply to your riding as well. But the basic idea is you want to have your fuel tanks topped off before you go into a workout to make sure that you can give yourself, you know, a good strong effort throughout the full workout. And so what you want to do, what they found is just eating protein or just eating carbs is not as effective as eating carbs and protein together. And so what they're finding is that the optimum ratio is 2 grams of carbs for every 1 gram of protein. And what this does is really, you know, something with that ratio and the combination of carbs and proteins together has your body working better than just one or the other if that ratio is out of whack. And so what that's going to do is raise your blood sugar levels, raise your blood amino levels, and basically get your fuel tanks topped off and ready to start working out. Because when you start training, the first thing that your body starts doing is drawing off of the, you know, the blood sugar and blood aminos that it has floating around in order to start replenishing what it's using. And so that's why, as you get, like, if you know, if you go into a workout and you're kind of hungry or haven't eaten for a while, and you get about halfway or three quarters through the workout, while you start to bonk, basically your blood sugar levels are really low, and you're starting to feel that. And so if you're able to top those off before you go into a workout, well, then your body is going to be drawing off of those, you know, those blood sugars and blood aminos for a little bit longer before, you know, they go low and it starts drawing off of more of the glycogen reserves and things like that. So basically, long story short, if you want to avoid the bonk during a hard workout, then you need to make sure that you got your blood sugar and blood amino levels topped off before you go into your workout. And so that's where, like, using one of these pre or post workout drinks before a workout comes in handy. So personally, if I have not had a chance to eat for an hour or so before I work out, then I will have one of these shakes handy, you know, start sipping on it before I work out and actually drink it throughout my workout just to kind of keep my blood sugar levels up throughout the workout. So, you know, if you had a meal within an hour or so of your training session, then you may not need to do that. So it may not be as important to do that, but just want to make sure that you're coming in fueled up. And then the other thing is you got to remember that training doesn't make you fitter. Training breaks you down, and you get fitter and stronger and faster as you recover from that training. So what you want to do is reverse the breakdown process as quickly as possible and put your body back into building mode immediately after a workout. So if you get done with a workout and then you don't eat for an hour or two, your body is still catabolic. It's flooded with cortisol, which is breaking down muscle tissue, and basically your body is not working towards building you back up. It's still trying to just get over and recover from the trauma that it perceives that you've inflicted on it from the workout. And so by using, again, one of these pre or post workout drinks with this 2-to-1 ratio of carbs to protein, again, you're going to, you know, get your blood sugar levels and your blood amino levels up quickly so that your body has a fuel source to start using to replenish what it's expended. It's got aminos to start rebuilding muscle tissue and basically reverse the process and get you back on the right track as quickly as possible. So the faster that you can recover from a workout, the better your results are going to be and the quicker that you can have another quality workout. And so if you're consistent with your pre and post workout nutrition, that can literally add up to, you know, several more quality workouts within a month, which is going to add up to a significant number over a year. So, you know, at the end of a year, an athlete or rider that's been doing this is going to have acquired significantly more quality workouts than a rider who doesn't. So over the long run, that's going to add up to better results. And so you kind of have to take the long view of some of this stuff. You know, it's not as impactful as taking, you know, like drinking a Red Bull before a workout where you're like, oh, you know, you immediately feel the buzz and you know, you may see some like performance numbers and stuff go up. This is, you know, like you said, this is building that foundation, that bedrock. You know, the caffeine buzz is very transient. What I'm talking about here is more permanent. And so, you know, using these pre and post workout shakes is a really good idea. Now, personally, there's a couple things that I recommend. I did a review in one of my previous podcasts on Mix One, which is a really great natural ready-to-drink product. The other thing that I really recommend, the Mix Ones aren't available everywhere, but the ProGrade Workout is the other one that I use. That's what I sell at my facility. That's what I, you know, recommend to my riders that they use. And again, the ProGrade Workout, there's nothing, you know, super fancy about it. It's just a simple sugar and whey protein supplement within that 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio that we're looking for. It's not very expensive, which is another reason that I really like it, and you know, really effective as well. So something I've been using for many years, and I've tried other pre and post workout drinks that are, you know, cost more, and you know, definitely think that the ProGrade Workout has a good quality product that'll give you pretty much everything that you need. A lot of these other products start throwing in, you know, these you know, quasi, you know, effective supplements and things in it to jack up the price and things like that. So, you know, be careful with that when you're, you know, what you want to do is educate yourself what you're looking for. And, you know, some of these more expensive products, like I said, you're going to notice all these other ingredients and they're promising you all sorts of better results. But, you know, what you're looking for is just a very plain, basic carbon protein supplement, you know, preferably a whey protein with whey protein isolates. Is a good way to go. So the other question I get on this is regarding chocolate milk. And, you know, there's a lot of info, I guess if you want to use that word, on the internet regarding this subject. And chocolate milk is something that pops up. You know, people saying, oh, chocolate milk is just as effective as these other supplements and stuff like that. And the reality is it's not as effective as these other supplements, you know, something like Mix One or ProGrade Workout. You know, there's a lot of things that chocolate milk has against it from this standpoint. You know, it doesn't have the 2-to-1 ratio of carbs to proteins. The protein in chocolate milk is a casein, which is not a very fast-acting protein, and so it's not getting into the system as quickly as you necessarily would want it to or would get from one of these supplements that uses a whey protein as its protein source. You know, it's got a lot of sugars. You know, unless you get a fat-free version, it's got, you know, relatively high amount of fat in it. So, you know, I guess if we're talking, if it's between nothing and some chocolate milk, then chocolate milk is better than nothing. But you got to remember, you know, the good enough is the enemy of the best. And it always amazes me how many people are just willing to stop at good enough. And personally, I'm not willing to settle for that. So, you know, if I'm going to put in a hard workout and I'm going to look for the best results from that workout, then I'm not going to skimp on my post-workout supplement in order to save a few pennies and possibly, you know, shortchange my results. So that's just me. You know, if chocolate milk is all you got and that's what you want to do, then that's fine. But, you know, these you know, forums and stuff on the internet, these bodybuilding places that are saying that, you know, chocolate milk is just as good, it's just not true. So just keep in mind what, it, you know, trade-offs you're making with that there. So anyway, so the pre- and post-workout supplements are extremely important. It's definitely like at the top of my list of recommended supplements, you know, as far as, you know, things like that go. So make sure that you're getting that you understand what it's doing for you, that you understand how to use it properly, and that you're using a good quality one like Mix One or ProGrade Workout or something like that. And beware of these, you know, these guys that throw everything but the kitchen sink in these things so they can jack up the price and make you all sorts of crazy promises and stuff like that. So that's basically it. Pre and post workout drinks can definitely make a huge impact on your training and overall results. So hope you guys have enjoyed this supplement tip and review, and I'll talk to you guys in my next one. Hey guys, James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems here with this podcast training tip. And basically what this training tip revolves around is applied posture on the bike. And this is one of those areas where I really start to separate from the traditional viewpoints on training for cycling and mountain biking in particular, where I think that you need to try to figure out how to maintain your posture and movement on the bike, not try to shape your movement and posture to the bike. And so the latter mindset is what has gotten us into the sit and spin mentality, where we're in this hunched over, turtled up posture, and you know, basically looking for ways to adapt that posture to the bike rather than applying good posture to the bike. And so good posture, when you get off the bike, and again, you got to remember that you are a human being first and a mountain biker second. You know, you're a human being that mountain bikes. And so, you know, I'm the first one to tell you that mountain biking isn't just what I do, it's who I am. But ultimately, that's really not true. That, you know, I am a human being, we're all human beings first, and we're trying to apply that humanness, shall we say, to our bike. And so the idea is, what is good posture, and then how do we apply that to the bike? So off the bike, it's pretty straightforward. We want a strong neutral spine, and what that means is we've got, if you're looking at yourself from the side, you've got your head stacked on top of your shoulders are stacked on top of your hips, and your hips are stacked on top of your feet. Everything's lined up properly, and you know, especially with the spine, you know, you've got a nice strong neutral spine. Now, your spine's not going to be straight. That's not what we're necessarily looking for, because your spine has natural curves. You know, at the upper back, it does curve out a little bit, and at the lower back, it curves in a little bit. And so, but what we want to do is avoid exaggerations of that posture. And with mountain bikers especially, it's the exaggeration of that upper back rounding that really gets us into trouble. So even though there's a little bit of a natural rounding of that upper back, it's when we get on the bike and we just really give in to that turtling up posture, as I call it, and let the chest cave in, the shoulders round forward, and that upper back just really gets super rounded. That really starts to throw off our posture, and unfortunately it starts to carry over off of our bike and into how we carry ourselves in real life. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the cliche posture for cyclists is that, you know, really forward rounded shoulder, almost disformed upper back posture, and that's not normal. Just because that's the way that most cyclists end up doesn't mean that that's healthy or normal for us. And so what we want to do is figure out, how do we apply our posture to our bike? And so it's really not very difficult, but what this goes to is, how do you move naturally? You know, if you don't have good posture off the bike and you can't apply good posture to some basic strength training exercises like, you know, push-ups or deadlifts or you know, inverted rows or some of these just basic core exercises that I talk about all the time. You know, if you can't maintain good posture while you're doing these exercises, then you're going to struggle to apply that posture to your bike. You know, you have to get off the bike and fix some of these movement things in order to apply it better to the bike. And so basically, I have a video scheduled to shoot later today or tomorrow that will show this stuff a little more visually. But in a nutshell, you need to be able to score at least a 2 on the active straight leg raise for the functional movement screen with no asymmetries between either side. And basically what the active leg raise is when you're lying down on your back with your legs straight and you lift one leg up as high as you can. And, you know, a lot of people look at this as a hamstring length test, and it's not really a hamstring length test. What it is looking at is your ability to stabilize your core and then hinge at your hip and not have to hinge at your lower back. And a lot of people that have quote-unquote tight hamstrings, what it's really doing is their body is recognizing a movement that it's not familiar with and strong with, and so it starts to shut things down. It starts to make the hamstrings get tight so that you literally can't get into a position that your body feels that it's not comfortable in. And so with the functional movement screen, the way that it works is, if you can't raise Say, for example, you're raising your right leg, and you raise your right leg up, and your ankle cannot get lined up with or past the knee joint on your left side, then that's a really, really limited range of motion in your hip hinge movement pattern. And so what you're looking for is to be able to get that leg up past the knee joint of the left leg, and preferably past halfway up that thigh. So if you were to measure between the top of your hip bone and your knee joint on your left side and place a marker there, what you're looking for is to be able to get your leg up so that your ankle bone is, you know, past that knee and somewhere between the knee and that other mark, if not, you know, preferably to that mark or past it. And so that demonstrates a good functional range of motion on your hip hinge movement. And so what you want to be able to do is get at least that, you know, a score of 1 with the functional movement screen is an inability to get your leg up, you know, past that knee joint on the opposite leg. So you need to be able to score at least a 2, get past that knee joint on each side, and not have an asymmetry between the two sides, you know, meaning that you're not getting one leg up significantly higher than the other leg. So from just a basic functional movement standpoint, if you don't have that hip hinge ability, you're always going to struggle to apply good posture on the bike. Because what that means is every time that you've got to get down on your bike, you're not hinging at the hip. You're not pushing your butt back and letting your chest come down towards the handlebars and being able to keep your spine straight. You're having to turtle up. You're having to round somewhere in order to make up for that lack of hip mobility. And so you have to have that before you can apply good posture on the bike. The other thing that you have to have is adequate core and hip strength. And, you know, in my mind, a really good measure for this is just a simple deadlift. You know, if you can do a, you know, for women at least a bodyweight deadlift, and for men at least a 1.5 times bodyweight deadlift without much trouble. I mean, it shouldn't be like a, you know, a true 1 rep max effort where it's like, you know, holy crap, you know, you look like your forehead's about to explode, it's so hard. You know, you should be able to handle those numbers with relative ease. That tells me that you've got the core strength and the hip strength that you need to apply this stuff on the bike. And so I guess my point is you know, I keep getting a lot of questions about how to apply posture on the bike, especially in a standing position, but even in a seated position. And I guess my answer is you have to get off of the bike and fix these things before you can apply the posture on your bike. And until you fix these things, you're always going to struggle to apply this good posture on your bike. And so that's kind of the paradigm that I come from things with, is when I see something wrong on the bike, I try to figure out what's the basic movement pattern behind it. Now, let's formulate a strategy to fix that movement pattern, and then it'll fix itself on the bike. You know, you won't have to overthink it and overcoach it and overdo it, because it'll just be how you move, and it won't be as difficult to figure out how to apply it. So, you know, I keep getting feedback from people, especially on my barefoot pedaling posts, about how, you know, with like standing climbing, for example, they feel like they're not able to, you know, maintain traction on the rear wheel, and you know, it just doesn't seem to work as well when they stand up. And my answer, you know, to that ultimately is, well, until you have got that score of 2 or better with no asymmetries on the functional movement screen, and you can pull off the minimum strength requirement or recommendation for the deadlift, you really can't apply. You can't. What I'm saying doesn't make sense. It's not going to work. You can't just go from a sit and spin with no thought towards posture mentality towards overnight just figuring this stuff out. And so that's where the training and stuff comes in. So that's where, you know, like I said, like doing your hip mobility work, doing your foam rolling for the glutes and the quads and the hip flexors, and especially that upper back area, you know, doing some static stretching for those quads and hip flexors, which get really tight, doing stretching for your glutes and your pecs to try to open the chest out, and then using strengthening conditioning exercises, like, you know, some of the ones I've mentioned, like, you know, push-ups and inverted rows for the upper body, deadlift. Bulgarian split squats is another really good exercise for the lower body. But basically, you know, increase the mobility and then increase your strength with that better mobility, and then the posture on the bike will come. So that's kind of the idea. But while you're on the bike, some of the things that you can think about to try to help give yourself better posture on the bike is just remembering that that upper back rounded posture is bad posture. So you should try to keep your chest puffed out and try to keep a nice arch in your lower back. Even when you're sitting down, you need to be able to do that. And this is where that hip mobility comes in, because when you're in your seated position, if you don't have the hip mobility to be able to lean forward at the hips and get yourself down in a position, then what you end up doing is leaning less at the hips and then rounding more at the upper back in order to get yourself down so that you can get your hands on the handlebars or get yourself in a position on your bike. And so this is where that stuff comes in. Even during your seated pedaling, you should be able to keep your shoulders pulled back and down, your chest puffed out, and a nice strong arch in your lower back. And even if you're not able to maintain that, don't give into it. You should still be trying to do it as best you can. Even if there is some rounding at the upper back or some loss of that arch in your lower back, like I said, don't just give into it and let yourself totally turtle up. Still try to work on maintaining as strong and neutral a spine as you can while you're on the bike. And that's going to ultimately lead to, you know, more power and better balance on your bike, and also lead to less overuse injuries over the long run. In fact, one of the highest rates of overuse injury among cyclists is in the neck. And a lot of that comes from having that caved in chest posture. Like, you can try this yourself. Get down in your attack position on your bike and really puff your chest out and get your spine as straight as you can, and then look up. And then let yourself collapse and let that chest cave in, let that lower back round, and then notice how much more you have to raise your head up in order to maintain the same line of sight. By letting that chest, cave in and go into that turtle up posture, you have to literally raise your head several degrees higher in order to maintain the same field of vision as you would if you're able to keep and maintain a neutral spine. So that puts a lot more stress on the neck having to do that. And so a lot of these things, like I said, you know, you don't think like, man, keeping my chest puffed out is going to keep my neck healthier. But everything's connected. You got to understand, if one thing's out of whack, it's going to affect things up and down the kinetic chain. So, you know, losing that upper back, that you know, strong upper back posture, and just going into that caved in chest turtle up posture is going to wreak havoc up and down your spinal system, so, or just your whole body. So anyway, so that's kind of some things to think about. Keep the chest puffed out. Don't let it cave in. Keep a nice tight arch in the lower back. Work on the hip mobility. Work on the single leg strength. Work on the hip hinge strength. And, you know, when you fix those things off the bike, then it's just going to happen naturally on the bike. But overall, that's what we're looking for as far as like applied posture on the bike. Remember, you know, we're human beings first, mountain biker second. So, you know, fix the human being and the mountain biker will improve as well. And, that's kind of how it works. So hope you guys have enjoyed this training tip, and I will talk to you guys in my next one. Hey everybody, hope you guys have enjoyed this podcast. Once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. You guys got any questions or comments on any of this stuff, definitely come over to my blog at BikeJames.com. You can post any questions in the comments section of this podcast, and I'll be happy to get back to you as soon as I can. Also, I'd like to ask you guys to do me a favor. I guess I kind of need to get into the shameless self-promotion thing here, but if you could go to iTunes, and, you know, if you subscribe to my podcast there, cool. If you haven't, that's where you can subscribe to it. But if you would, rate it and review it and kind of give some feedback on it, you know, those ratings and reviews help boost the, where it is in the iPod rankings and stuff like that. And so it would really help other mountain bikers who are on iTunes who are looking for good quality training information and mountain bike information to get a better idea of what this podcast is all about and really how valuable a resource it really is. You know, not to toot my own horn a little bit, but I've looked around and seen what the other podcasts are for mountain bikers, and there's not a whole lot, and there's even less that has like good quality information. So, you know, the more riders that know about this podcast, the better, I think. And so you guys can definitely help me get that, the word out by, like I said, going to iTunes, doing a review, doing, you know, rating this podcast, and that would really help me out. So once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. Hope you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to you in my next one.